Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
For nearly 2,000 years, the Catholic Church stood firm in doctrine and identity. But since the Second Vatican Council, many faithful Catholics have asked, what happened? In today's powerful and thought-provoking conversation, author Griff Ruby discusses his groundbreaking book, The Resurrection of the Roman Catholic Church, A Guide to the Traditional Catholic Community. Was Vatican II responsible for a loss of clarity in Catholic teaching? If the Church is indefectible, how do we explain today's crisis? And most importantly, where can faithful Catholics find the true Church today? Griff, a convert who discovered the faith without a religious upbringing, brings decades of research into Church history, theology, and ecclesiology. Is the Church in decline or experiencing a hidden resurrection? A bold, thought-provoking conversation that challenges assumptions and invites serious reflection on the future of Catholicism. We welcome Griff Ruby, author of The Resurrection of the Roman Catholic Church, A Guide to the Traditional Catholic Community. Griff, welcome to the program. Interesting conversation. Looking forward to it. Thank you for being with us.
Okay, well, thank you for having me.
Well, let's talk about the motivation in writing this book.
Okay, I guess let me just go what we're on here. Yeah. So I was writing my book. I'm going to start with the first thing here. I guess one thing to think of was, why would I have written this book? And what it was, in about 1991, I had my first encounter with an actual full-blown traditional Catholic. And in fact, a whole church full of them all at once. This was like a whole community I had no idea existed. If nothing else, I have to say that a lot of this book isn't even my story, because it had been going on for a long time. And I wasn't in any religious milieu, let alone a Catholic milieu, let alone being where I am now. So a lot of this history took place without me, but I did have the benefit of talking to lots of people and finding a lot of older things that were printed. I'm not exactly literature. I'll get to that later. But the point was that I saw this for the first time. It was great. It was awesome. It was what I'd always kind of wanted, but I didn't know that that really existed. And I'd seen something I hadn't seen before, and that was holiness. You go into any church, and it really doesn't even seem to matter much whether it says Catholic or Methodist or whatever, you name it.
Yes.
You go in there, it's going to be song, it's going to be dance, it's going to be entertainment, and at best you might come out of that like out of a nice action thriller movie. That was a great show, but it's not like you've been fed spiritually. And what feeds us spiritually is very carefully coordinated and honed sequence of Gregorian type tones sometimes, or classical hymns from more than 100 years ago, or lots of silences and things of that nature that give you room for just an awe and respect to grow and develop, and something that I don't think I'd really seen before, and that's a real holiness. And until people can call something holy and call anything they may like or whatever holy. But when you see the real thing, it changes you when you really encounter it, and especially you get surrounded by it.
It made an impact on you. How did you go from that to, I think I'm going to write a book, and then I describe this as groundbreaking? People are very impressed with the research that you've done, the thought that has gone into the book. The book is The Resurrection of the Roman Catholic Church, A Guide to the Traditional Catholic Community. Griff Ruby, the author, is our guest on the program. How did this evolve, this motion, this moment when you're very impressed with what you're seeing? How did that evolve into the book?
Okay, well, I met these people in that one day, or the one time I'm up somewhere at where this church was, and I went inside, saw the mass, a real Catholic mass like every Catholic would have seen 70 years ago if they just went into any Catholic church anywhere on the planet. So it's kind of mind-boggling to realize this is not something weird or special or for some tiny little elite club. It's just what everybody had a couple generations ago. And now some of the oldest Catholics will still remember sort of that stuff from their childhood. And when they see a place like this, it brings it all back. It's like, oh, wow, that's right. They do this like this. And I forgot they do that. Yes. I guess I'm old enough to actually remember, the church from the old days when, and that would have been just any Catholic church on the face of the earth. But I'm seeing all of this. Obviously, as you know, you don't see that much of anywhere. In fact, you have to have like a directory to find where these chapels are. A lot of them are kind of small, and some of them rented rooms and hotel facilities and stuff like that, because they're still coming up with enough money just to have an actual church for themselves. But I went in there and suddenly I was like, first of all, where has this been all my life? Well, obviously I was standing in one place where it had been, which was in a whole other state from where I lived. But the other thing was, who are these people? Where did they come from? Where does all this come from? Because before long, I also discovered I had gone up to one place in particular. It was Mount St. Michael's in Spokane, Washington. And that's where I first saw all of this. But I was still kind of curious about some of this. And the priest said, well, you want to see something else, take a trip about 30 miles down the road near the top of Idaho, in Post Falls, Idaho. You'll find another traditional church, but it's a different traditional group. And you might want to see how that compares. So I went over there. And sure enough, there's another one there. And this one was a priory for the Society of St. Pius X. And they really were very, very similar, but there was a history, and I wanted to realize, is there a book I can read to kind of, take my hand and guide me around all these different groups and people and history and all this stuff? Who are they? What did they do? Why did they do it? And what are some of the questions that, sometimes I have Catholics even arguing over these things.
Yes.
Like old rabbis or something, discoursing on interpretations of the Talmud or something, But what causes that? What's the history? There was no such book. Now, that isn't to say there aren't some books written by traditional Catholics. There's traditional Catholics who have written a lot of books about what's wrong with the whole Vatican II religion. Why is it? What were all the changes? Because some people think, they just went from doing it in Latin to doing it in English. That's just one teeny tiny particle of what happened. There's so much more that happened. And that's what needs to be, first of all, documented. And then second of all, what's wrong with that? I mean, hey, it's in English. I can understand what's going on there. Yes. Isn't that important? If they were saying the same prayers and so forth, that might be, at least in some ways, arguable. But they actually changed the content of the prayers. Whole doctrines were just gapped out. Not expressly denied, per se, but just no longer mentioned, like they don't exist anymore. Things like the merits of the saints. Unpleasant things, too. Purgatory. Yeah, they don't want to talk about stuff like that. So it might be technically acknowledged at your new church or whatever, but they won't bring it up. If you ask about it, they'll give you some answer, but which may or may not be any good, but they won't bring it up. Here, all the whole realm of everything that the church has taught, it's all there. It's all on the plate. And that's a big difference. And because of that, it actually, the Novus Ordo doesn't make, and Novus Ordo, Latin for new order, because it was a new order, like we have a new world order.
Yes.
Stuff like that. It's kind of the ecclesiastical equivalent. Let's just say Vatican City has a sign on it, of Vatican II, which reads, under new management.
Yeah, okay. I told you this was going to be groundbreaking and thought-provoking. The book is The Resurrection of the Roman Catholic Church, A Guide to the Traditional Catholic Community. The book is available wherever books are sold. Griff Ruby is the author and our guest, G-R-I-F-F Ruby. His website is M-R-U-B-I, U-B-I, Petrus, P-R-P-E-T-R-U-S. I'm going to spell it all out here. And we've got the link on our website, so you can go there and click on and go directly to the website, M-R-U-B-I, P-E-T-R-U-S.com. And I'll give you that several times during the course of the interview today. Talking about the historical and theological impact of Vatican II, the book, again, available wherever books are sold. How long did it take for you to write this book?
Well, I would have to say it was about 7 years after that, 6-7 years, before I finally sat down and began writing the draft of what has now become this book. I had drafted some different portions. What happened was, when I found this notebook, this meant so much, well, then I have to, it looks like I have to write it. So, but where am I going to find all the information? There was a lot of very knowledgeable people there that helped. There were knowledgeable people at the other church. They have these tiny little magazines that nobody else has heard of. I subscribed to these, got as many back issues as I could get, and started finding out all what I could find, every book, every article, every fact sheet, even parish bulletins, everything I could get my hands on, and just having to piece it all together and even sift through the various discussions and disputes that have existed in the face of what has been, for all of us concerned, a situation that really is kind of inexplicable, or at least seems that way. Yes. I think it can be explained, but it seems that way. And when you can't tell what's going on, it's like you see a magic trick and one person says, well, they just had a helicopter, or they just used a secret door in the stage, or, you know, it was smoke and mirrors. It was a hologram. It was, you know, you can come up with all these different ways, but of course there's whatever it is the magician actually did. You know, that's the real secret, you know, and this has been kind of like that. So I wanted to understand, and I did a lot of all this reading, traveling, finding out, visiting other places where there were traditional Catholics and their churches and chapels and so forth. And I wanted to do this more and more. But what was I going to write? My initial premise was, how about a who's who of key figures in traditional Catholicism? Start with some popes, start with some scholars, start with some particular priests and bishops who are of particular significance, both as good guys and bad guys, and, you know, all this kind of stuff, and have like a chapter on each. And eventually I realized that would be hopelessly out of scope and not really what I wanted to do. So the next step was to say, I'm going to compress it down to a single volume. And then I started to structure that volume. So when I did that, that's as the book began to take shape. And after about another couple of years since I started in September of 1996. And by about the middle of 1998, I finally had a full-length draft. It still needed work, but at least all the substance was there. The full length was there. All that was left was, there were still places where there was the paucity of details to work from. And I had to work from very bad and limited information.
What was it like for you in working on this? Did you have any idea where the story was going to take you when you started the research and writing it? So many people will write this off. Vatican II, it's change. We all have to change and adapt. And you found it was much more than just adapting and making something more modern. What was it like for you? Were there surprises when you went along and you discovered what you did that you bring out in your book?
Well, as I investigated more, this wasn't just me. And that's the kind of the beauty of it all. As I said, I already had missed, you know, how many years of this history. Yes. From basically the Vatican II up until 1990, 91, somewhere in that span, I had completely missed out on all of this. So that's not even the story of my life until I kind of start to get involved and get more and more involved. And it still took a little while just to trust it, just to kind of really get a sense of, you know, are these people really, you know, playing it straight? Are they, you know, and where do they get their authority? And all these kinds of questions were still very open questions for the longest time. But I could at least document who did what, where, and when, and so forth, and why. And it was the why that was obviously the most interesting. And when I understood everybody's reasons as they talked to me, saying, well, we're doing this because, and they explain themselves and whatever particular position they've taken as far as what's going on, that really helped me see what is going on. And so it's really not just me working alone. Fairly early in all of this, there was a priest on the internet who actually founded the first traditional Catholic website back in 1994.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, very first one. And it's still out there. And so I would send in stuff, but he had like an email list. You send stuff in, and if he thought it was, maybe he might be a question and he might respond to it, or just a comment. And if he thought whatever you had and maybe whatever response he might want to make was worth sharing, he'd share it with everybody on this email list. And you just ask, hey, put me on this, and you get this stuff whenever you get stuff. Sometimes it'd be one a day or several a day, different messages commenting, usually on recent news events and so forth that affect the church in some way or other. But I would send pieces of this, and they would go out to his readers. And sometimes people would comment and respond, but on the whole, there was a very favorable sense of much of what I was writing. But it was a good place to get a feedback loop. In a way, all of those other participants are kind of like co-authors of the book in a way. So, I may have done virtually all of the writing apart from what I'm quoting people, but they were there as like a check and a balance to all of this. So this is not just, one guy sitting down writing a book. This is a whole community that I've discovered. It's worldwide in extent. And so I've heard from Catholics in parts of the world that one wouldn't have even expected anything like this.
How big is this movement, the traditional Catholic movement? How big is this? It almost, when you just read in the surface, sounds like sort of spotty, a little here, a little there. People can't get over this. They want the Latin mass back. When you read the book, The Resurrection of the Roman Catholic Church, you realize this is much bigger than that, isn't it?
Yeah, well, part of that bigness is just the sheer internationalness of this.
Yes, yes.
So that's one part of it. So we're spread awfully thin in most particular locations. There are hubs of traditional Catholicism. In fact, Mount St. Michael's is one of them. In fact, the Priory, 30 miles away, is a minor hub for the SSPX. But there are other bigger hubs in St. Mary's, Kansas, which I visited. There's another hub, but, New York, that's the one I was thinking of. Oyster Bay Cove, New York, and there's all these different places where it's like there's a hub, and then you have a lot of people who travel oftentimes for miles, hours just to get to Mass. And of course, sometimes it's so long that they can't make it every Sunday, so they might come twice a month or once a month because they're coming from 300, 400, 500, 600 miles away. So that's part of it also. Yes. I don't think it's, but as to the actual size, I can number it vaguely in the millions. I think it's less than, I'm sure it's got to be less than 100 million, probably less than 60, or maybe in the neighborhood of 10 to 30. But it could be as small as 2 or 3. I don't have any numbers. Because a part of all of this is there's also the other rites of the church, which at least for a period of time, weren't affected by all of this. The Eastern Rites, the Byzantine Rite, and all these different, Malabar and et cetera, all these different rites of the church that exist in specific areas, and they have already their own different but equally ancient and authentic worship traditions, which are fascinating to learn, by the way. But there's still way too much there, and I can only give that the most token acknowledgement in the Resurrection book, which is unfortunate.
It sounds like another book. In fact, let me ask you about that now. Are you working on anything else? There's so much information there and so many little side streets that you came across there that if you travel down, there are interesting stories. Are you working on something else now?
Well, my something else has to do with another series. I've been calling them Sede Vacante. And what that is, they're like a theological footnote to the Resurrection book. but they're a very huge footnote because there's a lot to cover, and it's nice to put the documentation in here to give good, solid quotes with plenty of context for all the things that the Catholic theology teaches us about the church and its existence and how it functions and what it believes and why and so forth. There's a lot all there, and it quotes that. And then, having come up with all this, I gradually began to formulate a theory, which I've documented in the second volume. Now, my next project, as it stands right now, would be a third volume, which would mostly just be a collection of articles, many of which I've published, some of which I haven't, and some would be new, that would just get drill into other specific details or questions or whatever on the subject. And that's what I can think of, further down the pike, a more generic book of, kind of like a book sort of thing, but that's for way down the pike. And
I was just going to say, all of your books are available, by the way, online. You can go to Amazon or all the places, or Griff's website. I'll give you the website now, and then I'll give it to you as we wrap up the interview. MRUBIPETRUS.com is his website. It's Griff, G-R-I-F-F, Ruby, R-U-B-Y. If you Google Griff Ruby Books, you'll find it. If you go to Amazon, you'll find the link for this book we're talking about, The Resurrection of the Roman Catholic Church, A Guide to the Traditional Catholic Community. And if you click on the author's name, you'll go to the other books there as well. Rapidly running out of time, but I need to ask a couple more questions here. I've got a lot more in my curious side, but we don't have time to do that. So I'll encourage everybody to read the book. What kind of response are you getting from those in the traditional community that are like, okay, finally we've got somebody recognizing and writing about our thoughts and concerns and desires, and people in the regular flock, I will call it, that are reading this and maybe getting a different perspective?
Well, those who think is there is a hunger for this, even among those who haven't seen it, that hunger is still there.
Yes. Just
some would remember it, and others, even though they don't remember it, they see it. This is really something different from anything you'd find in, I think, just about any other church you could think of. Maybe some East Orthodox, I don't know, but that'd be about the closest, and that still isn't very far because it's very close, because the traditions are very different from the Latin ones. But it's something that people hunger for, I think. So when they read about it, they think, yeah, we should do more of that. So some people may kind of say, I don't like it, but I haven't received much of that. I guess if they're not interested, why bother? Why waste time on it at all? So, but my book has been around since 2002, been revised a couple of times since then as more historical events and other things happened. But the nice thing is, it's probably sold, I don't have a complete number, but I think it's somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 copies over that time.
Oh, fantastic.
So, bad for a print on demand. I mean, the story of a print on demand, you sell 10 of them and, and 8 of them went to family members or, mostly who don't read them or don't get past the first page, and the other two went to some reviewer or somebody who just, buys some weird stuff all the time just to see what's up, and that's it.
Well, this book is groundbreaking, as I mentioned in the beginning, and rapidly running out of time, but let's sort of tie it together here. Is the true Catholic Church still here? Does it still exist as people knew it decades ago, centuries ago?
That, in a nutshell, is what I'm trying to claim. It exists among the traditional Catholics, and we all adhere to the same established truths of the church, the practices, the doctrines, the worship, the morals, everything of what the church has always been. Every traditional Catholic, no matter what their explanation may be for stuff that's been going on, they all adhere to everything that the church has always classically taught and can be found in all the old catechisms from the time before Vatican II. And it still lives, and certainly, like I say, I'm sure we number at least somewhere in the low millions.
What would you say is your principal message? What would you hope people take away from reading this book, The Resurrection of the Roman Catholic Church?
I would say the main thing would be what a person should do is find where such a church is. There's directories. I talk about that in the book, where to find that. And you can find it online. And try to visit such a place. Make the pilgrimage. And it'll probably be a pilgrimage for many people. It was for me. But make the pilgrimage and see for yourself. Because all the writing in the world can always say, there's good reasons to go here to make this pilgrimage and see what there is to see. But you go there, and either affects you as it affected me, or, well, there's going to be some people it just doesn't affect. That's the way things go. And that's what I recommend, because once you find that, you know what you need to do, and it's okay if it takes time for it to build your trust and stuff. But by and large, and in most respects, they really do deserve that trust. You know, and certainly for all the essentials of Catholicism, they may advocate a specific position within all these things about what's going on. That's guesswork. But as long as we go in knowing that and accepting as a good guess, maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong, but anything about the church, the faith, and all that, you're getting straight stuff no matter where you go in this whole community. And that's what really unites us. And that's also part of my goal, too, is to be able to recognize our fellow traditional Catholics and learn how to work together and see ourselves and what we are, the actual church today.
I'm going to close with the question I began the interview with. Is the church in decline or experiencing a hidden resurrection? What's your thought on that?
I believe it seems like it's a slow, gradual growth at this point. I'm hoping it'll be kind of one of those exponential things where, you know, the story of the one penny to two pennies, four and eight and so forth, you know, after a couple of weeks, you still have only a few dollars, you know, and I think we're kind of in this still have a few dollars stage, but I can hope and pray that we get to the point where it gets to where the exponential part starts taking over. And as you know, by the end of the month, you're over $1 million. And I'm hoping it'll have that, or at least have the kind of growth like the church had in the first century, or something somewhat akin to it, because it's what people need to do. It's what Jesus Christ came to this world to establish.
And your book is going to be so helpful. I mentioned groundbreaking. That's a word that I can't repeat often enough, because it really is. It covers new ground. It gives you new perspective. It is thought-provoking, certainly. The book is The Resurrection of the Roman Catholic Church, A Guide to the Traditional Catholic Community. You'll find the book wherever books are sold, as well as Griff's other book. Our guest is Griff Ruby, G-R-I-F-F, Ruby, R-U-B-Y. His website is mrubipetrus.com. We've got all these links on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Go there. You can click to Griff's Amazon page. You can click to directly connect to his website, thisweekinamerica.us. And I'd like to thank thinksparkllc.com, igniting stories, sparking legacies, bringing stories to life from script to screen to readers' hearts. And I thank them for setting up our interview for today. Griff, it's been a pleasure. So much in the book that we didn't get to. So buy a copy of the book, and you'll find yourself really going back in time to maybe what you remember the Catholic Church was at one point in time as a youngster growing up in the church. I know exactly what you're talking about here. And it was a very short conversation, but we covered a lot of ground in it. Thank you for being with us on the program.
All right, you're welcome.
It has been a pleasure to have Griff Ruby with us on the program. The link available at Griff's website, or our website, to take you directly to his website. You're listening to This Week in America, and we are back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.